You're listening to Bearing Witness, a Guardian TV story by Martha, read by Seth, S-E-F. The rating is teen. Summary. After the death of Yuzun, the time has come for Shunwei to strip himself of every mask. It's not an easy process for anyone. Chapter 1. Rice Dumplings. On the second Friday of every month, Guo Chengchun climbs the iron staircase and carefully lays a bouquet of flowers in the center of the library table. Then he sits down and talks to Wang Zheng as if she were standing across from him, regarding him with that well-remembered expression, equal parts mild exasperation and gentle forbearance. Then on the last Friday of the month, Guo Chengchun usually goes out for lunch and returns with a paper bag of fried foods from a street vendor. He removes the faded flowers from his last offering, and he arranges the food on a plate so the heat and grease won't stain the table. He tells Song Zan about the little things he saw on his walk, thinking he might be interested in the ordinary daylight world that had been forever just beyond his reach. He can almost see the quick smile and generous nod of acknowledgement. This Friday, however, he had permission to take the afternoon off, so he picked up an early breakfast to leave as his offering in the library. "Rice dumplings," he announced. "I thought you would like the bean paste, but next time I could get a savory filling." He glimpsed a whisper of movement among the stacks. Maybe just a reflection of light from the street, but Guo Chengchun lowered his head and talked about how busy the streets were with the repairs still going on all over town months after the invasion. "It is all extremely expensive," he said seriously. "My uncle says they are considering a tax increase to help pay for everything, but that will be very unpopular." Chu Shuja glanced up as he came down the stairs afterward. "You do know Da Qing goes up right behind you and polishes off any food you leave in the library," he announced flatly, one eyebrow raised in challenge. But that expression had not frightened Guo Chengchun for a very long time now. "The deputy is welcome to help himself to whatever will assuage his hunger." Guo Chengchun even raised his voice slightly to ensure he would be heard. The cat, sleeping on the sofa, didn't lift his head, but the ears twitched. Chu Shuja rolled his eyes and went back to his work. With a little smile of his own, Guo Chengchun also settled down for the morning paperwork. He labored steadily until midday, taking a break once to return to the library and clean away the empty plate and bamboo wrapping from the breakfast dumplings. He passed Da Qin slumbering halfway up the stairs in a patch of sunlight. It might have been Guo Chengchun's imagination, but he looked especially fat and content. "I'm taking the afternoon off," he reminded Chu Shuja as he gathered his belongings and put his bag over his shoulder. "I've already received permission from Chief Zhao." Chu Shuja glanced at him. "I remember." And then, "Would you like me to come with you?" "Oh, I wouldn't have to impose on your time. I know you have work to do here." "Then don't stand around catching flies, or Lao Zhao will find work for you too, and that'll be the end of your free afternoon." Guo Chengchun caught the metro line to the university station, and from there walked to the Department of Bioengineering. Professor Shun was already waiting for him on one of the wooden benches beside the curving front staircase. The professor did not raise his head as Guo Chengchun approached, so he paused a slight distance away and apologized for leaving Professor Shun to wait in the sun. "The trains are running slowly because of the repairs. I ought to have left the office earlier to catch the express." "You owe me no apology," Shunwei said. "Your work at the SID is extremely important to Zhao Yulan and to others. Also, it is you who are doing me a great favor today." Guo Chengchun was a little embarrassed, but he did not allow himself to apologize again. "We'll need to walk an extra block to catch the special," he said. "It is so far out of town, we can only get to it on a spur line." "Are you sure you wouldn't rather take a taxi?" "The metro is fine." The professor stood at last, Guo Changchun watching him covertly. Professor Shun was not well. He had not been well for a long time, not since he and the chief had last returned from Dixing. Everyone could see. Guo Changchun had tried to talk to Chu Shuja about it a time or two, about how seldom he appeared in the black robes of office, how infrequent his smiles were, and how sad. How wan his complexion, lips white against a colorless face, eyes darker than old Dixing. Every step, every movement so precise and slow, as if Shen Wei were perpetually surprised that bone, muscle, and sinew continued to bear him up. "Enough," Chu Shuja had finally growled. "He Pausha has slain his own brother. You think he is not entitled to his grief?" "You are concerned," Shen Wei said, interrupting his train of thought, and Guo Changchun realized his observations had perhaps been not so covert after all.
No,
Guo Changchun stuttered.
Maybe a little. I wish you could not be sad. Look, it is a beautiful day."
Shen Wei cocked his head thoughtfully. "The sun on my face is always a comfort, as is your undemanding company, Xiao Guo." As rebukes went, it was very gentle, but Guo Changchun heard. He kept his thoughts to himself, silently offering his arm to the professor. Shen Wei took it after only a moment's hesitation, and they walked to the station arm in arm. Guo Changchen's own strength and balance were not so very great, to be sure, but he was glad to share. The trains on the spur line of the metro were infrequent, and the underground station itself was very old and not maintained as carefully as those along the main system. Other passengers were already waiting. Guo Changchun led Shen Wei to the last empty bench. The air in the tunnel was hot and stuffy, and there was unrepaired damage here from the Dixing incursion. The cement walls of the tunnel showed scorch marks. A piece of the wall had buckled on the other side of the tracks, and a sickly spray of white roots dangled through like grasping fingers. A single yellowish vine crawled upwards towards the artificial light.
"Professor Shun,"
Guo Changchun asked after they had been sitting in silence for some time.
"I know I am very foolish, but sometimes when I bring little offerings to the library to remember Wang Zhan and Song Zhan, I think that I actually see them, back in the shadows, around behind the shelves."
The professor did not laugh. "I am sure that you may see them," he said. Guo Changchun waited for him to continue, and when he didn't, he ventured to ask,
"Then why won't they come forward and speak to me?"
"I know you wish they could," Shen Wei said gently. "But after a traumatic bereavement, it can take time for our perceptions to catch up with reality. We don't fully understand the neurobiology of such hallucinations, but perhaps they are a compensatory mechanism in the face of terrible loss." It took Guo Changchun a moment to untangle this.
"Hallucinations? Professor Shun, I know there is no such thing as ghosts, but I thought perhaps with energy beings..."
Shen Wei waited for him, his expression kind. Guo Changchun sighed.
"You mean Wang Zheng and Song Zhan are not really there at all?
I only see them because I miss them so much."
Professor Shun smiled his sad smile. Some of the lights were out in the station, and in the gloom, Shen Wei's own face was pale as a ghost.
Professor Shun, Chuga says that you are grieving for your brother. Do you see him as well? Do you wish he could speak to you?
Shen Wei closed his eyes. As the silence between them stretched out, Guo Chongchun heard the hum and rattle of the tram somewhere far down the tunnel. Then all the lights on the platform winked out as suddenly as a door slamming shut.
Professor Shun!
Guo Chongchun yelped and flailed out for him. Alarmed cries came from the other people at the station, blending with the rumble of the approaching tram. Shen Wei's fingers touched Guo Chongchun's arm in the darkness and then grasped his wrist firmly. It's just an electrical fault, probably due to repairs going on somewhere else in the system. His low, level voice was the reassurance of a candle on a moonless night. Guo Chongchun took a deep breath and looked around himself. The darkness around them was a thick blanket, impenetrable.
"Shouldn't there be emergency lighting?"
he asked, fumbling for his mobile phone in the depths of his messenger bag. "If the power does not return in a moment, I will..." And then, while Shen Wei was still speaking, the lights came back. Guo Chongchun blinked away spots in front of his eyes. Shen Wei ducked his head while the voices of the other people on the platform rose in relief and laughter and complaints about the slow pace and inconvenience of all the repair work. And the tram pulled into the station. It was an hour-long ride to the end of the line. The tram stopped at every station out here in the unfashionable suburbs, while one person or two boarded or disembarked. Guo Chongchun wrote in his journal. Shen Wei bowed his head over his own book. Guo Chongchun peeked over, but the pages were lines of formulae he couldn't begin to decipher. When he glanced up at the professor's face, however, he didn't think Shen Wei was reading either. His eyes were shadowed and fixed. Guo Chongchun noticed a tremor in the professor's left hand where it lay on the armrest, and when he looked up again, Shen Wei was watching him. "What's on your mind, Xiao Guo?"
"I'm worried about you," he blurted. He had not intended to say that out loud, but once it was hanging in the air between them, he went ahead and said the rest of it as well. "We all are. Chief Zhao watches you when he thinks you don't see him. And he is so sad. He wants to help. I want to help too."
The professor winced at Zhao Yanlan's name, but the expression he finally turned on Xiao Guo was steely. He might not have been wearing the robes, but Guo Chongchun did not doubt he was sitting beside the Lord Envoy in that moment. "I do this to spare Zhao Yanlan's already much-tried heart further anguish. If you cannot assist me after all, please tell me now."
"No,"
Guo Chongchun protested too loudly.
"I mean, yes."
The other passengers in their car glanced over at the raised voice.
"I just want everyone to be happy. I don't want anyone to be hurting and sad. Please let me help."
Shen Wei did not gentle his stern expression. After a few long moments of silence, though, he closed the book in his lap and sat up. He was not looking at Guo Chongchun anymore. In time, his eyelids closed, and he let his head drop forward. Guo Chongchun sat miserably across from him in silence until the tram reached the end of the line. There was no one else in their car by then. Guo Chongchun wondered if Shen Wei had fallen asleep.
"Professor Shun?" he asked softly. "This is our stop."
"Yes,"
He opened his eyes and allowed Guo Chengchan to help him to his feet. The autumn shadows were already lengthening as they set out on the last phase of their journey. Somehow, it had never seemed like such a long walk from the station before, but he had never traveled the final half-dozen blocks with anyone else, far less with Professor Shun at his side. They walked arm in arm, their pace slow. Neither spoke. The streets were quiet, with less evidence here of damage from the invasion. Guo Chengchan was still concerned, but he found he was also very happy to be sharing so precious a duty with the professor. He hoped it would comfort Shen Wei, as it comforted him. The tall iron gates of the cemetery stood open. Guo Chengchan led the way to his parents' graves through force of long habit, before he stopped himself. "Professor Shen, do you want to present your offering first?" Shen Wei shook his head. "No, I'm already imposing on your private rituals. I will first accompany you, if I may."
"It's this way.
When I was small, I did not like to burden my grandmother or later my aunt and uncle with my unhappy experiences, so I would save up the hard things and share them all here."
"And now?"
"Now I have friends who will share the good and the bad, so when I visit, I tell my parents that I am happy and have found fulfillment in my life." He rooted around in his messenger bag and pulled out stick incense. Lighting it, he said, "Mama, Papa, I have brought a friend with me today. He is Professor Shen Wei, a teacher at the university and a mighty hero who has done a great service to us all. I'm very honored by his company." To Lao Li's gravesite, he brought a little cellophane packet of cinnamon sticks and star anise.
"None of us would even try to prepare your dried fish, Lao Li," Guo Chengchan said. "We do not have your skill. But you should not worry that Da Qin is going hungry. We all of us bring little tidbits to him every day. I even think he helps himself to the offerings I leave in the library for Wang Zheng and Song Zan."
"It's all right. I do not think they would mind." For Dong Nan, he had brought a handful of cracked corn, as well as a jelly cup, which he left on the marble bench where she had breathed her last. At Grandmother Li's grave, he smiled to see a dried bouquet already there. He laid his own bean curd sticks beside the faded flowers.
"I am so happy that Li Chen can visit you now. Did she tell you of her great bravery and of the service she did for me and for all of my friends at the SID? I am honored to call her my friend as well."
It was soothing to fill the quiet of the cemetery with soft commonplaces. It was so much easier than the raw grief of his serum-induced power. Through it all, Professor Shen remained respectfully in the background. He was so quiet and still that Guo Chengchan almost forgot he was there. Almost. One could never really forget he was being shadowed by the black-robed envoy, no matter how self-effacing and quiet.
"Professor Shen, I have bestowed my offerings and talked with everyone I wished. Are you ready?"
He smiled back at Guo Chengchan with a slight, pained wince that seemed the opposite of happiness.
"Yes, it is time."
"Do you know where it is?"
"I have a map. They gave it to me when the monument was installed."
He handed over the folded paper. It took Guo Chengchan a moment to orient himself, but only a moment. He had spent long hours in this cemetery.
"Oh, it is a distance from here, all the way up at the edge of the forest."
He had never seen a monument placed so far out of the way.
"But that's a good place," he hastened to assure Professor Shen. "The marker will be shaded from the heat of the sun."
Chu Shuja would have made a sardonic comment about the dead not caring so much about the sun. Professor Shun was not Chuga, but Guo Changchun clarified anyway.
I mean, it will be more comfortable for visitors who come to pay their respects.
There will be no visitors, Shunwei said. Just you and I. And only once.
Lao Chu, I need you to tell me I'm an idiot.
Chu Shuja barely raised his head.
Should I do it now, or would you like me to calendar a weekly reminder?
Zhao Yunlan shook a finger at him and clucked.
You might at least hear what I have to say.
I hardly need the additional evidence.
Chu Shuja finally looked at him.
Go on.
Are Xiao Guo and Shunwei up to something?
Chu Shuja snorted.
If Xiao Guo were up to something, every one of us would already know all about it. And Shunwei would certainly know better than to pick a fool like him to be his fellow conspirator.
Chu Shuja's expression seemed fond all the same. Chu Shuja was right, of course.
Yes, yes, I don't know what I was thinking.
But then Chu Shuja announced, Shunwei will definitely get stronger. It should have been a non sequitur, but it wasn't, not at all. Zhao Yunlan was mortified to feel tears start to his eyes.
Of course, he nearly shouted. It's just a matter of time. Anyone can see that.
Chu Shuja considered.
On the other hand, Xiao Guo has told me 3 times that he will be visiting the graves of his parents on Friday. There's nothing unusual about that, except each time he reminds me, he also tells me that I do not need to accompany him.
I have never accompanied him to the graveyard. It is somewhat peculiar that he is worrying about it now.
Here's the other piece of evidence, Zhao Yunlan told him. Xiao Guo cleared his time off this Friday directly with me. Ever since he started, he's only checked his schedule with Da Qing. Xiao Guo never initiates any kind of conversation with me if he can possibly avoid it.
And how does this involve Shunwei?
Lao Chu asked gruffly. He was not enjoying this conversation anymore.
I've got no idea. It's just he told me he has a committee meeting late in the day on Friday and was going to get a ride home with another faculty member.
That's it?
Zhao Yunlan, you were right the first time. You're an idiot.
Well, not like that comes as a surprise to anyone who knows me. The two of them sat, looking glumly at each other. Zhao Yunlan was thinking that he had not survived the past year by ignoring his hunches, no matter how irrational. Before he could say anything more, though, Chu Shuja suddenly growled,
Let me talk to Xiao Guo. I'll get it out of him.
No.
Zhao Yunlan hated to stop him, but he had to think about this.
Shunwei might need someone to talk to.
Doesn't he have you?
Twist the knife while you're at it, Zhao Yunlan thought. What he said was,
The last few months, well,
you said it yourself.
He's not healing, and I don't know why, and he doesn't talk about it. I guess it's possible he just needs... Maybe he needs someone like Guo Changchun to listen to him.
You mean a good-hearted simpleton? Chu Shuja scoffed without rancor. How's that going to help anyone?
Well, you don't seem to mind his company so terribly much, Zhao Yunlan could not help pointing out.
I am not the Lord Envoy.
The point is, if Shen Wei wants to spend his Friday afternoon sweeping gravestones with Xiao Guo, it's really none of my business.
Chu Shuja looked highly skeptical.
So I'm going to talk to Lin Jing. Which was how Zhao Yunlan came to be parked on a shady lane near campus, Lin Jing beside him in the front seat so he could give directions based on the signals from Guo Changchen's phone. The same hacked cell phone that was now broadcasting the conversation between Guo Changchen and Shen Wei, loud and clear.
Why on earth would they take the metro? Zhao Yunlan growled in exasperation.
At least call Shen Wei a damn taxi cab.
Shen Wei is going to shove you in front of a taxi cab when he finds out what you're doing, Daqin remarked from the back seat.
That fucking cat disapproved of this entire project, and Zhao Yunlan was a little sorry he'd brought him along at all. He glanced in the rearview mirror. Chu Shuja looked like he probably agreed with Daqin.
It is way too late for you to claim any plausible deniability, Lao Chu.
They're walking to the Hung Baoshi Street station, Lin Jing said, pretending to be an impartial observer. Or maybe he really was just interested in the technical aspects of their surveillance. That's a spur line, just like Xiao Guo said. It'll eventually drop them off a few blocks from the Zitang Cemetery.
What are you going to do? Daqing demanded scornfully. We could be there in 20 minutes. Are we just going to sit at the front gate and wait for them?
He waved broadly, a big fake smile on his face.
Why, Xiao Guo, Professor Shan, fancy meeting you here. We were just in the neighborhood.
Zhao Yunlan ignored him. Let me know when they're on the train. Then we'll drive to the next station along their route, just in case they're not really going to the cemetery after all.
You got it.
Guo Changchen's voice was suddenly loud inside the jeep, exhorting Shen Wei to be happy because the sun was shining. Chu Shuja sighed loudly from the back seat.
Idiot.
It seemed to take a very long time before Lin Jing announced, Okay, they're right at the station entrance now, so we might lose the signal when they head underground. Do you want to drive to the next stop or wait until they actually board?
How far away is the next station?
Only about 6 blocks. You take a ride on Ziwei Street and...
Hey, that's odd.
Cold prickled across Zhao Yunlan's scalp. Son of a bitch, he had known there was something screwy about all this.
What is it?
I'm not sure. Some funny readings on the power grid centered right around the station.
Funny. Funny how?
If I didn't know better, I'd say it reminded me of the signals I picked up back when we were trying to track the Crow Tribe.
What signals? You told me there was nothing to track, since Yasho don't use electronics or dark energy.
They don't. There isn't, Lin Jing protested defensively. But the electrical grids sometimes seem to show some interesting perturbations when Yasho were moving through the city. I was never able to develop an algorithm that could predict...
I don't need your doctoral dissertation. Just tell me what you're looking at.
In the background, Guo Chengchun was prattling on about the offerings of food and flowers he left in the library. But then Shen Wei answered, and Zhao Yunlan waved Lin Jing silent to hear. He couldn't make out every word, but Shen Wei's response to ghosts in the library was clinical and a bit cold. All about psychological defense mechanisms and hallucinations. Guo Changcheng seemed to accept it, but then he asked, innocent as a babe in arms, if Shen Wei was listening for the voice of his dead brother. Zhao Yunlan's vision whited out. his throat closed, and for agonizing seconds, he couldn't move, breathe, or speak. Then Dachin smacked the back of his head.
Xiao Guo's not the idiot. You are. Don't you know eavesdroppers are going to hear things they don't like?
Guo Chongchen's mobile phone began to transmit screams. Zhao Yunlan threw the jeep into drive.
Give me something, Lin Jing. What's going on down there?
I don't know, he shouted back.
These readings don't make any sense. I think the power was out, but the tram is still running, so I don't...
Shen Wei was talking.
Shut up. Let me hear.
Shen Wei sounded calm and quiet as ever, despite the background of staticky shouting. Just a glitch, he was saying, not surprising given the ongoing repair work.
Is he right? Zhao Yunlan demanded.
It's not impossible.
Zhao Yunlan braked hard at the curb before the station entrance. He had already flung open his door when Lin Jing said,
Wait, I think the lights are back.
A burst of crowd noise came through his equipment, settling quickly into occasional ambient squawks that could have been laughter, but which no longer sounded like panic.
And there's a tram pulling in.
Zhao Yunlan entertained a brief, vivid fantasy of marching down to the platform and pulling Shen Wei the hell out of there right now. Instead, he slowly loosened his death grip on the steering wheel. When the train left the station, he took a right on Ziwei Street, beginning their leisurely hopscotch around the edges of Dragon City. The cell phone coverage was better than Lin Jing had predicted, but Guo Chengcheng and Shen Wei did not seem to be saying much to each other. Dachin had started playing a game on his phone, and Zhao Yunlan was sure he had turned up the sound effects just to be annoying. Lin Jing passed around a bag of satay tofu chips. Zhao Yunlan had taken out his third lollipop of the afternoon, but before he could unwrap it, Guo Chengchen's voice was suddenly loud in the vehicle with them, telling Shen Wei to his face that everyone could see he was sick and weak, and that it was worrying Zhao Yunlan to death.
Well,
so there was that laid out in the open where everyone could see. Zhao Yunlan dropped his head back and stared at the roof. He could hear the blood rushing in his ears. It was more inexplicable than ever why Shen Wei had chosen to subject himself to this. But then Shen Wei explained himself to Guo Chengcheng.
I do this, he said plainly, to spare Zhao Yunlan's already much tried heart.
Zhao Yunlan pulled open the door and spilled himself out into the quiet street of apartment blocks, and he walked away. He walked faster. It turned into a jog, and then he was running full out, as though he could simply outrun the news that Shen Wei could not share his grief with him, that in fact, he would rather spend his entire afternoon riding around on the subway with Guo Chengcheng, rather than sit down with Zhao Yunlan for 5 minutes and talk about his sorrow. He ran until his mind stopped thinking, until there was nothing left but furiously pumping arms and legs and the burning in his lungs. Then a sudden stitch in his side pulled him up so short he was lucky not to have fallen on his face. He limped to the sidewalk and bent over double to catch his breath, then carefully stretched his overtaxed muscles. Eventually, he heard the SID jeep behind him, so he stopped walking and turned back. There was no salvaging his dignity at this point. Lin Jing leaned out from the driver's side.
Xiao Guo and Professor Shen are out of the subway and walking to the cemetery now.
Move over. I'll drive.
Okay.
Lin Jin got out, glancing back at Da Qin and Zhu Shuja, who were watching from the back seat in silent judgment. Cowards.
The thing is, Lao Chu thought we might be going back to headquarters now.
Jiayin Lan swung himself into the driver's seat.
Why would we be doing that?
Lin Jing ran around and got in on the passenger side. He glanced toward the back seat again.
Well, since now we know they really are going to the cemetery.
At least it looks that way.
Zhu Shuja huffed in exasperation.
You have a comment, Chuga?
Are we really going to sit outside the cemetery gates for the rest of the afternoon and listen to Xiao Guo leaving yogurt cups on tombstones?
If that's how He Baosha plans to spend his afternoon, it sounds like a very worthy schedule for the SID to follow as well. Of course, if you have something better to do, you could always catch the subway home.
The truth was, Zhao Yunlan had a growing suspicion that he knew what Shunwei was doing. The details were sketchy, and he certainly did not understand Guo Chengcheng's role. But now that he had burned his own emotions dry in that stupid, heedless run, he could see matters more clearly. He was overheated and uncomfortable, his clothes sticking to his body, but his mind felt clear and cold as ice. At the next intersection, he stripped off his jacket and flung it in the back seat, ignoring Da Qing's aggrieved complaint.
"Find us a place to park where we won't be too obvious from the cemetery," he said, and Lin Jing obliged.
They ended up a little further away than Zhao Yunlan would have liked, almost 3 blocks south of the entrance, but the signal was strong from Guo Chengcheng's phone. Everyone heard Shunwei quietly insist that his own errand could wait.
"That's what doesn't make any sense at all," Da Qin snapped. "What errands does Shunwei have in a graveyard?"
But Zhao Yunlan was more sure than ever that he knew. He tightened his fists, then forced himself to relax and listen to Guo Chengcheng tell his dead parents that he was happy to be a member of the SID and honored by Shunwei's company. Da Qin sat through the offering Guo Chengcheng laid at the grave of Lao Li, but afterwards, without another word to anyone, he slammed out of the jeep. He leaned against the cab and tapped furiously on his video game. Zhao Yunlan listened to Guo Chengcheng's cheerful conversations with dead people, some of whom Zhao Yunlan had known, others he had not. Shunwei was silent, and except that he had not heard Xiao Guo bid him goodbye, he would not have known he was still there at all. And then, at last, Guo Chengcheng and Shunwei were discussing a monument Shunwei had apparently commissioned and then had installed, consulting a map to discuss its location.
"How does that make sense?" Lin Jing demanded. "Why would Professor Shun buy a gravestone? Does he even have any family?"
The silence inside the vehicle was leaden. Lin Jing shrank a little in his seat.
"Oh," he said.
Guo Chengcheng was surprised when they finally stood at the site. A slab of speckled gray granite, like the base of an unfinished project. The monument was nestled in the dirt with only patchy grass struggling around it. Guo Chengcheng wished he had brought flowers. The slab was bare even of an inscription. Shunwei had explained that there could be no monument in Dixing, for fear of its becoming a shrine for loyalists, and that for the same reason, this plain marker in Haixing must remain an inviolate secret between the two of them.
"Remember what I have told you," Shunwei said. "What you see may frighten you, but it is necessary,
and I will be stronger for it in the long run. Do not approach me until I am finished. I am likely to be weary afterwards. That is when I may need your assistance. Guo Chengchun bobbed his head. I will surely do as you ask. He handed over the small container he had been carrying for Shen Wei and took a few steps back. He watched as Shen Wei hitched his trousers to crouch in the weedy grass, then placed his offering before the granite slab.
Do you remember, Didi, the millet porridge we lived on for months after we came to the surface?
He bowed his head, and a small smile touched his lips. What a treasure it was when we could find a handful of wild greens, or procure even a bite of protein. Insects, a lizard once, a feast fit for a king, we thought. But oh, my beloved brother, I would gladly have subsisted on this plain millet until the end of time, to spare you what came after. I am sorry. I am sorry. I am so sorry. He knelt, bowing lower with each iteration, until his forehead was pressed to the dirt. Tears rolled down Xiao Guo's cheeks, and he buried his face against his elbow, fruitlessly trying to muffle his sobs. Shen Wei was not quiet. Huddled before the only marker he could ever give his lost little brother, his sudden wail of grief rent the heavens. A flock of tiny birds startled upwards out of the trees. Guo Chengchun was so surprised by Shen Wei's terrible cry that he fell backwards, landing hard on his rear. He started to scramble towards Shen Wei before he remembered. He had been warned that Shen Wei's grief would be a hard thing to see. Guo Chengchun would have to be brave. He wrapped his arms around himself, no longer trying to stifle his own tears, as he bore witness to the lamentation of Hei Paosha. Shen Wei drew a gasping breath and cried out again. More scream than sob, the raw, ugly sound rose unbearably until his voice finally broke. Huddled before the granite slab, he clenched his fists and drew another shuddering breath. Guo Chengchun dared hope the worst was past, but Shen Wei cried out again in a voice so hoarse and broken the hairs rose on Guo Chengchun's arms. Shen Wei's grief seemed to charge the very air around them, and a moment later, Guo Chengchun realized it was literally true. Dark energy had begun to crackle around Shen Wei. As inchoate as his cries of sorrow, the manifestation of energy writhed, terrible in its lack of form or purpose. Guo Chengchun realized his eyes were burning, but when he squeezed them shut, he could still see blue sparks crackling against his closed lids. He covered his face with his hands through the worst of it and was trembling like a leaf when the screams finally ended and Shen Wei simply wept. Guo
Guo Chengcheng cautiously lowered his hands from his face. The dark energy around Shen Wei fluttered like soot instead of ball lightning now. Flat, brittle flakes that rose up, dispersed on the slight wind or crumpled on the thin grass. Shen Wei was prostrate before the granite slab, and Guo Chengcheng ached to go to him. But he remembered his promise and held himself still. The sky overhead was darkening towards evening. The shadows under the cypress trees were very black. Night-blooming flowers were just beginning to unfurl, their perfumed breath soothing the lingering bite of ozone. Guo Chengcheng fumbled in his bag.
"Professor Shen," he whispered, "I have tissues and some bottled water."
Shen Wei did not answer, though he was struggling to rise. Propped on one arm, his head hung low, and his panting breaths were loud in the twilight. Guo Chengcheng burned hot and cold with sympathetic grief and his own uncertainty. Was this the moment? Surely Shen Wei would call for him. But suppose he was too weak even to manage that? Guo Chengcheng stumbled to his feet and took a step forward, but then backed up again. He would force himself to wait just a little while longer. The scent of the flowers was growing oppressive. Guo Chengcheng could see them now, creamy circles of white opening all along vines the groundskeeper had neglected. The flowers bloomed in such profusion that Guo Chengcheng began to question the evidence of his senses, and he wondered if watching the dark energy flash around Shen Wei had damaged his eyesight, though the heavy fragrance of the flowers seemed to confirm their reality. Meanwhile, Shen Wei had finally lifted his head, though he still did not rise. He was saying something, his voice so ruined and soft, Guo Chengcheng could not make out the words. He shuffled cautiously closer.
"Professor Shen," he whispered, "is this the time? Can I help you now?"
"Didi," said Shen Wei, and his broken voice carried through the twilight gloom and the heavy blanket of fragrance surrounding them both.
How is this possible? Why are you here?"
Guo Chengcheng gasped and looked around. He and Shen Wei were assuredly alone.
"I don't understand," Shen Wei said.
"Are you truly before me?" And he reached his hand to the emptiness above the granite slab. Guo Chengcheng went cold with horror and pity.
"Professor Shen, there is no one there. It is only grief that makes you see Yizhen. That is what you told me, remember? Professor, please."
Shen Wei clumsily knelt up before the marker.
"Di Di," he cried. "I'm sorry."
Da Qin had finally put away his game. It was quiet within the jeep, save for the muted, incidental sounds of Guo Chengcheng and Shen Wei walking through the graveyard in search of Yizhen's memorial. Zhao Yunlan was cold and still, a porcelain figure in a snowbank. He would bear witness, even if he was not permitted to be at Shen Wei's side. After what seemed interminable wandering, punctuated by Guo Chengcheng's apologies for having trouble reading the map and mild complaints about the quality of the groundskeeping at the far northern edge of the cemetery,
They seemed to stumble upon it at last. Guo Chengcheng exclaimed,
"Wait, is this it? But there is no inscription at all."
Shen Wei's response was too soft to carry, though he seemed to be warning Xiao Guo not to interfere. There was an explosion of close scratching sounds as Guo Chengcheng rummaged in his bag near his phone. Then silence again. Zhao Yunlan stared into the distance, eyes unfocused. He was not thinking. He was not feeling anything. Then Shen Wei spoke clearly. He talked of porridge, from an age when he and his brother had traveled together to seek their fortune. He apologized thrice. He did not ask forgiveness from his psychopath of a brother, Zhao Yunlan was distantly relieved to note. But his regret was agonizing. Zhao Yunlan dug his nails into his palm, porcelain on the edge of shattering, perhaps. Guo Chengcheng was sobbing noisily. Otherwise, there was little sound except for occasional traffic on the quiet street they were parked upon. It occurred to Zhao Yunlan that, possibly, he would never recover from the shame of knowing that Shen Wei considered him too fragile to share this heartbreakingly modest offering to the dead. The hell of it was. It was entirely possible Shen Wei was right. Zhao Yunlan felt as though he were stretched finer than spun glass in the face of Shen Wei's grief. And then it became worse. At the first sudden scream of anguish, Lin Jing started so violently that his head banged against the window. "What the hell?" But with the second cry, it became inescapably clear who and what they were listening to. Chu Shu just swore thickly, let himself out of the jeep, and stalked away. Zhao Yunlan himself felt completely unmoored, adrift in terrible seas as the wail of grief went on. Static exploded across the speakers. Lin Jing shook his head and quickly adjusted the volume down to a bearable level. "I don't know," he said, anticipating Zhao Yunlan's question. "The uncontrolled release of dark energy, maybe." Zhao Yunlan raised his head. "That's what Shen Wei was warning Xiao Guo about." His voice shook. He swallowed and tried again. "Shen Wei must be releasing dark energy. Is that why he couldn't heal? Was he somehow hoarding his grief in the form of energy?" Lin Jing looked panicked even to be asked. He shook his head and shrugged, defensively raising both hands as though to ward off the very question. In all fairness, it wasn't really possible to think, with Shen Wei's despair tearing the world raw. Zhao Yunlan covered his eyes with one hand and endured, even as the ragged cries finally ended. At some point, Da Qing had changed form and was now huddled in Zhao Yunlan's lap, his broad, dark head pressing desperately against his sternum. Guo Chengcheng's voice stuttered on the speakers, offering a drink of water or tissues. "Idiot. And very kind. At least Shen Wei had a good-hearted soul with him, if not a particularly competent one." Guo Chengcheng's voice changed. Zhao Yunlan's head came up. Shen Wei's voice was hoarse and distant, but Guo Chengcheng's words were shockingly clear. "That is not possible," Chu Shuja almost shouted. Zhao Yunlan hadn't noticed his return. "Xiao Guo is right. Yizhen is gone. He could not be up there in the cemetery now." Maybe it wasn't possible, but the only other explanation was that Shen Wei was lost in psychosis, and truly, that would be even worse. Zhao Yunlan started the engine. Guo Chengcheng grew increasingly frantic as Shen Wei pleaded with a phantom. Zhao Yunlan made the final turn and roared up the boulevard for the shadowed cemetery gates. Something seemed strange about the entrance in the late afternoon light, but he was right up to it before he could understand the problem. The gates were not in shadow, they were shut tight and completely overgrown with the wisteria vines that gave the cemetery its name. Zhao Yunlan turned furiously on Lin Jing.
"This can't be the entrance. How do we get in there?"
"This is the front gate. It's right on the boulevard. There isn't any other way in."
"Look at this," Chu Shuja barked. He was examining the gate more closely. The old-fashioned oversized lock was pierced through and through by a circle of thin steel blades. Neither the overgrown vines nor the jammed lock would have been enough on their own to stop Zhao Yunlan from simply ramming the gates. The barrier on the other side was another matter altogether. Stones of every size, from pebbles to boulders, were piled against the gate and covered the road beyond in drifts and valleys, like the aftermath of an impossible granite snowstorm. Zhao Yunlan gave a shout of incredulous, horrified laughter. Then he threw himself at the gate and started to climb. Guo Chengcheng couldn't wait any longer. Shen Wei was losing himself to delusions. He had to be made to see. Guo Chengcheng managed only a single step, however, before his feet tangled and he fell hard. He struggled up, choking on the sweet fragrance of the night-flowering vines, and finally saw the Yasho.
"Yu Jiehua,"
he shouted, dazed with relief.
"Good brother Moonflower, can you help us, please? My friend has been overcome by his grief. Will you assist me in bearing him to safety?"
The Yasho rose up. Its figure was more plant than man, tendrils reaching from the earth and writhing into a simulacrum of torso and limbs, before twisting away once more into the gathering shadows. White flowers unfurled above his suggestion of a face, like a halo or a crown. Their fragrance was suffocating.
"Unhappy human child,"
the Yasho whispered in a voice like the wind blowing through reeds.
"Don't you know? This is the abode of angry ghosts."
"I know there is no such thing," Guo Chengcheng exclaimed indignantly. He coughed, still trying to reach Shen Wei.
His head swam, and he had the terrible suspicion that this member of the flower tribe was not a friend at all.
"Are you the reason my friend is talking to ghosts?"
"Stop it! Get out of my way, please!"
"Those ghosts have already come for the Dixingren trader, and if you do not flee, they will take you as well."
"No!"
Guo Chengcheng roared.
"Professor Shen is no traitor."
He managed another step, fell to his knees, pushed himself up, and fell again. The vines clung, matting around his ankles. The perfumed air gained texture and depth, seeming to throng with barely seen images, so Guo Chengcheng did not allow himself to look. There was no such thing as ghosts. Why didn't Shen Wei remember? But he only knelt on the granite slab in a maelstrom of poisonous blossoms and illusory faces and whispered,
"Oh, Dee Dee, please. No,
And even though he knew it was impossible, when Guo Changchun raised his own head, he thought he saw Yuzun too, terrible even in death and in his baffled defeat. He floated up under the cypress trees as Guo Changchun insisted, "You're not real, and I don't believe in you." With that, he finally tore through the vines and reached Shen Wei. He grabbed his shoulders, hauled him around, and shouted in his face, "Professor Shen, it's not real!" Shen Wei's eyes were frantic, so wide and dark that Guo Changchun imagined he could see a reflection of the flowers in them. He tried to shake him, but Shen Wei only shrugged slightly, bringing up his arms to free himself. Guo Changchun wrapped his fists in the lapels of his coat.
"Professor Shen, please!"
When Shen Wei knocked him away again, Guo Changchun shouted,
"I am so sorry!"
and simply tackled him as hard as he could. The back of the professor's head hit the granite slab with a dull thump that Guo Changchun felt more than heard. He gasped in sympathy, apologized, and said,
"Professor Shen, I don't want to hurt you, but you must look at me."
Shen Wei's body coiled and tensed beneath him, and before Guo Changchun even realized what was happening, he had been flung aside once more, easily as a fly swatted by a horse's tail. Shen Wei rose up next to him, his expression thunderous, and dark energy crackled in the palms of both hands. Guo Changchun thought he was about to die, and heartbroken at the thought of leaving Shen Wei alone, he exclaimed hurriedly,
"That is not Yuzun, and Brother Moonflower is not your friend."
The dark energy withered to ash in Shen Wei's hands. He fell back on his heels.
"Xiao Guo?"
Guo Changchun burst into a fresh flood of tears.
"What is Moonflowers?"
Shen Wei's expression sharpened, and he finally managed to stand, shaking with effort. A rush of wind cleared the air, and Guo Changchun realized that despite the twilight, the shadows beneath the cypress were not nearly so dark as they had seemed just a few moments ago. Shen Wei turned slowly to face the Yasho. "You dare greatly, Yu Jiehua," he said at last. Hoarse from screaming, his voice still was heavy with threat. "Recklessly spreading your fragrant poison of illusion in a graveyard. Did you think to mock my grief?" Brother Moonflower bowed low, and the entanglement of vines made his form less human than ever. The flowers about his crown were tightly furled.
"I humbly suggest that the Lord Envoy should reconsider his words. This young page himself has said his lordship is in mourning, which may cloud perceptions. As the saying goes, the player is lost, while the watcher is lucid."
"You think to appease me with aphorisms? This is not a game, and you are no impartial observer. The treaty has been signed anew after terrible bloodshed, and you choose to risk it all."
"No, indeed. The Lord Envoy attributes malice to my mere existence. If my fragrance reminds his lordship of past sorrows, then perhaps he should look instead to the state of his own heart."
"You are welcome to try those prevarications with Du Hong when she stands in judgment of your actions here today," Shen Wei said in cold dismissal.
As he turned away, Guo Changchun caught a lingering hint of fragrance in the air. He saw the trickle of blood just above Shen Wei's collar, and knew with terrible regret it was from his tackling Shen Wei to the granite. He cringed in shame. He should have found another way. Then the shadows thickened with ghosts once more. Guo Chengchun squeaked and immediately squeezed his eyes shut to banish the illusion. When he dared open his eyes again, he was just in time to see one of the ghosts swinging a club at Shen Wei's head.
Ah!
He screamed, and Shen Wei twisted away. The short, heavy staff only clipped his shoulder, though it still dashed him to the earth. The shadows roiled with figures, some of whom were apparently not apparitions at all. Cruelly incarnate, the staff fell again, cracking against Shen Wei's raised forearm.
"Who are you?" Guo Chengchun pleaded. "Stop it!"
Something was falling out of the sky. Stones, Guo Chengchun saw, when a handful pattered off his shoulders and bounced into the dirt at his feet. The rocks falling around Shen Wei were larger, their aim ominously specific. They clattered against the granite slab beneath him. The dark energy coiling in the palm of his left hand was dispersed harmlessly under a violent rock shower, while his right arm hung useless at his side. As the stones continued to fall, Shen Wei swayed under their impact. His glasses were smashed from his face. Blood covered his cheek and jaw from a cut above one eye. Horrified, Guo Chengchun did the only thing he could think of. He flung himself forward and bore Shen Wei to the ground once more, thinking now only to shield the professor's body with his own. The stones thumped against the back of his head, down his spine, along his legs. Shen Wei twisted beneath him, but this time Guo Chengchun was ready and snaked his arms around Shen Wei, refusing to be dislodged. The stones grew larger, heavier. One hit his scalp and he saw stars. Another smacked his tailbone and his legs went numb. He hung on grimly until a sudden, startling blow under his ribs drove the breath from his body. As Guo Chengchun gasped for breath, he was grabbed by the scruff of the neck, dragged from Shen Wei, and thrown aside. The pain under his ribs was a shocking, ice-cold pressure. He looked down to see a circle of narrow spikes in his side. He put his arm down to brush them away and found they were embedded fast. He grasped the end of one and dragged it out, revealing a fine, bright blade barbed at the tip. Blood poured from the wound behind it. He stared in befuddled horror at the dozen or more still in his side, gave it up as hopeless, and raised his head, desperately looking for Shen Wei. Professor Shen lay on his back, suspended in midair. His head hung lower than the rest of his body, and his arms were flung wide, his hands open and empty. A circle of thin steel blades had been driven into his belly. Another circlet protruded from one hip, and yet another rotated just above his left breast, circling and sparkling in terrible, unmistakable threat. Blood dripped to the granite beneath him. The moonflower Yasho coalesced more tightly into a man-shaped figure, and five-fingered hands formed at the end of his upper limbs. He reached out to cradle Shen Wei's face, bending forward to gaze down upon him.
"The Lord Envoy would be the first to remind me of the hard-won treaty which binds the Yasho to strict neutrality. I leave his lordship, therefore, to the judgment of his countrymen."
Around him were three venerable Dixingren, who had approached under cover of the moonflower's illusions. They looked to Guo Chengchun like they should have been meeting at a neighborhood park for morning Tai Chi, or perhaps gathering a fourth for a round of Mahjong.
"Alack for this generation," said the first.
"Better I should have died in my sleep than live to see what has become of the old ways," said the second.
The third elder carried the blackthorn club, which he laid across Shen Wei's throat.
"The lantern burns as brightly in Dixing
as the sun in Haixing above, he said mournfully. When the light is no longer balanced by the dark, we are all plunged into chaos.
Does anyone wonder that our young people continue to flee to the surface? Asked the first.
Night has been exchanged for day, evil mistaken for good, responded the second.
And hey, Pausha kneels before the master of the guardians and plays the whore for an easy life of pleasure under the sun, concluded the third. He turned the club so that its bulbous head pressed hard into the soft flesh under Shunwei's jaw.
Nevertheless, we will be merciful and extend to you a final opportunity to set matters aright before your death. Call back Yazan from the kingdom of the dead.
Shunwei choked.
What does he say? Demanded the first elder.
The third bent close to Shunwei and released the pressure above his throat. Shunwei's voice carried, broken and rasping as it was.
The dead have no kingdom. And you have brought annihilation upon yourself by profaning the name of the Lord Guardian.
That's your answer? The elder forced Shunwei's head back with the pressure of the staff's head under his jaw to silence him.
Then I commend you to your ancestors.
The second of the elders raised his hands. The slender knives above Shunwei's chest spun in the twilight as Guo Changchun crawled forward and stabbed his crackling, fear-powered baton into the elder's foot.
Ah!
The elder yelped. Shunwei dropped sharply, twisting in midair to land in a crouch. The glaive was in his left hand, and for an instant, everything stood still. Then the third elder hissed.
I will never beg mercy from the likes of you, Lord Envoy.
Neither shall you receive it. Shunwei thrust the blade upwards and the elder fell, struck dead from a blow through the heart. The Yasho devolved into shapeless tangles of green and disappeared into the forest. The surviving elders made haste to follow. Guo Changchun wondered if he should chase them, but he didn't seem able to stand up. The cold pressure beneath his ribs had turned hot. The glaive dropped, its blade ringing against the granite slab. Guo Changchun was shocked.
Professor Shun!
Shunwei looked equally surprised. Still on his knees, he reached for the bloody weapon. Instead, he tumbled to the granite after it. Guo Changchun dragged himself forward.
Professor Shun, how can I help you?
Shunwei lay on his side, curled around the spikes in his gut. His face was shadowed in blood and dirt. His eyes were wet, and he did not answer Guo Changchun. The granite marker beneath him had cracked from side to side.
I am sorry the new monument is broken.
Guo Changchun knew that wasn't really the important thing here, but he couldn't help himself. There was a red tide frothing at the back of his consciousness, and he had the vague idea that chattering might keep it at bay.
But perhaps you can procure another. And then we could try again.
Shunwei huffed out a soft breath of air. It turned into a groan, but he managed to whisper,
I believe the time for monuments is past.
He raised the fingers on his left hand, bloodied as they were, and twisted into claws by the rockfall. He continued softly,
truly, this was not the service I imagined when I requested your company today. But I am grateful you are here with me, Guo Changchun.
Now, rest. His eyes were suddenly heavy, but he didn't want to close them, especially since that was surely Chuga's voice roaring,
"Xiao Guo!"
And those were certainly Chuga's broad, strong hands, gentle upon his body. His eyes rolled up, and he saw Chief Zhao kneeling over Professor Shun.
Oh, that was all right then.
Guo Chongchun slipped away into dreams.